you so much for hanging out with us. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. And Andrea, we've been having these conversations about use of force. When a police officer decides to pull their weapon. We actually were talking about this when there was a change in policy with the Chicago Police Department.
Right, with their consent decree.
And the paperwork.
Then, yes.
So that we've had a lot of conversations about it. And one night I said, wrongfully, I said that police officers shoot to kill. And we had law enforcement individuals texting and saying that's not accurate.
That is not accurate.
They shoot to stop.
Shoot to stop the force. Stop the threat of the stop the threat.
Right. So because we were having those conversations with the text screen, and we also have law enforcement experts, I thought it would be better to have a conversation with our good friend John O'Malley, who reached out and offered to help explain some of these issues that are obviously at the top of everyone's, I think, concerns these days. John O'Malley is the former deputy chief of the U.S. Marshals. He's a law enforcement expert and talks a lot. We've talked to him about all kinds of safety issues. John, so I wrongfully said that police officers shoot to kill. That's not accurate, is it?
That's not.
It's not. So what is accurate? In what situations do they decide to fire their weapons?
Well, so officers are trained at basic academies and then throughout their careers to use deadly force, obviously, when it's necessary, and to eliminate the threat or stop the threat that is present in front of them. If that means the person was killed during that encounter, then unfortunately that's the case. But officers, and then the other false situation that people say, well, why couldn't the officer just shoot to injure the person?
Right. A lot of people say that.
Shoot him in the leg.
Wing him.
Exactly. So, unfortunately, you know, once you pull that trigger, deadly force is deadly force. So it pretty much means what it says. And, I mean, you could shoot someone in the leg and they could still die from, mm-hmm. you know,
excessive blood loss.
Bleed out or whatever the case is, hits a main artery in the leg or so be it. But officers are trained to use that force to eliminate the threat that's present.
What's scary to me is, for on behalf of police and law enforcement, is the hesitation factor, which Eddie Johnson spoke of, you know, with regard to the consent decree in many respects. When that goes into effect, anytime a weapon is pointed at someone, not drawn, but pointed at someone,
sure,
there will be paperwork now that has to be filed. My worry is the hesitation. If I'm being attacked or I need help or something and I'm calling 911, I want the police to come and stop that threat. I don't want to be attacked. I don't want to be hurt. I don't want to be harmed. And I don't want the police to have to hesitate or to worry about that.
Right. I think, and that consent decree, I think that was originally what the request was. That has since been toned down, so to speak, that if an officer in the city of Chicago, this is specific to the city of Chicago police, that an officer in the line of duty draws their weapon and points that weapon at a threat, they are required now to call that in on a radio, and that's pretty much the end of it. There is no written documentation that they have to do based on that use of force.
Okay. And
I think that there was some hesitancy by the police and the union to really fight that, and it does seem a little bit excessive that if I were, especially in some neighborhoods in the city and in an urban environment like Chicago, at any given shift, an officer may have his or her weapon out numerous times during that one shift.
Sure.
So for them to then have to write reports on that, it might interfere with patrolling, the city.
Yeah.
So
creates a lot of paperwork, it seems like.
Correct.
Now, in a real life situation, if something's happening, whether it's a robbery or someone is being injured by another individual, what is that sort of response? How quickly is an officer making the decision to draw their weapon and perhaps using deadly force?
Well, there's times, depending on what the call is, what you're responding to, that as soon as you get to that scene, you want to have your weapon out at what we call low ready, which is kind of midsection high, close to your body, and so that you are able to, at any given split second, move that weapon into a position of defense, or if you had to use it.
When is it decided that a taser will be used? And do all officers have tasers now?
Yes, they do. So Chicago has really ramped up the taser program here and across the country Most officers carry a taser as a normal course of business. So tasers are an effective tool, but it's one tool in the officer's toolbox. It's not the be-all, end-all, and it's appropriate for certain situations, but it is definitely not appropriate when someone you're encountering has a deadly weapon or if deadly force is necessary.
Okay, right.
So if someone has a weapon, a gun in particular, mm-hmm. obviously you don't want to have to rely on your taser. And there's limitations to the taser, distance.
Right.
Outdoors, if it's windy,
mm-hmm.
You know, and you're 25 feet away, that taser is not going to be effective.
Well, it depends, too. There's a YouTube video now circulating about a traffic stop down near Roosevelt by that shopping area where there was a man threatening people at the golf club, and they tased him. It did nothing.
Well,
and he turned and said, "Is that all you got?"
Right.
Really?
And he's, you should see this video. It's awful. And I felt so sorry for these police officers because they're saying, drop it, drop it, drop it, drop it, drop it, drop it. And obviously no one's going to pull their weapon and shoot, of course, because it's a golf club. But, you know, they tased the guy twice and he went, that's all you got? Bring
it on. So So once you use that taser, once it makes contact, you can, it's 5 seconds of shock into the person. Okay. You can't take that 5 seconds back. It can't be
right. Like
so, once you do it, but you can do it again numerous times, and then it'll give another 5 seconds of a shock. So in the training, you know, if I tase you, Patty,
well, what did I do?
For example,
right, I give up.
My partner, or partners, or if there's someone else on the scene, knows they have 5 seconds, and the training is to move in then and try to restrain that individual within those 5 seconds, knowing you're not going to get any contact. You're not going to get any residual contact from that taser, right? So I've been tased. I went through the training. You're not required to get tased to complete the training, but it's kind of a peer pressure thing. And once you see everyone else doing it, you don't want to be that officer that doesn't go through their training. And I can tell you, for that 5 seconds, it's pretty severe. But then once that 5 seconds is over, there's no lasting effect whatsoever, really.
Okay.
But tasers they have been shown not to be totally effective on people, especially that are under the influence of certain narcotic drugs. Mm-hmm. It just
right.
How, I don't know. After being tased, I can't believe that has limited or zero effect on somebody. But you know, there's plenty of evidence to show that there are circumstances in certain people that the effect is not as it is tended. So.
They're just built differently.
Yeah.
In situations where you are, dealing with a police officer for whatever reason, and this comes up a lot too, you know, if somebody would have just behaved the right way or done the right things.
Sure.
But what are your rights when you are in contact with law enforcement?
Well, first of all, an officer has to have some reasonable suspicion to stop you. So if that's a traffic infraction, mm-hmm. You didn't come to a full stop, you ran a red light, didn't use your turn signal, whatever it is, expired license plates, that gives the officer or officers reasonable suspicion to make contact with you.
Right.
Or then the next level up would be probable cause. And probable cause usually comes into if they're going to then effect an arrest. But if you are stopped by a police officer in a traffic, most people's encounter with police are during a traffic.
Right.
Either you're speeding, whatever the violation.
I don't know what you're saying.
Right. Including myself.
Okay.
Yeah. Or a red light camera.
So I always tell people, listen, comply with an officer's demands.
Right.
Comply with an officer's orders. Okay. And you and comply and complain later.
Right.
Comply and complain later.
There,
like any other profession, there are fantastic police officers all across this country, and there are some not so fantastic ones. If you find yourself in a situation that officer or officers is not treating you with respect, then simply comply with what they're asking you to do, and you have many avenues to complain later.
Right. And also listen to, if they say put your hands in, I've been pulled over and they say put your hands on your steering wheel, and I will say, can I reach under the seat and get my purse, or can I reach? And they say, yes, thank you for asking.
Yes.
Just listen. Well, that's all you have to do. So, put your hands in view. And I've gotten it. We've all been told, hey, put your hands in your steering wheel.
Absolutely. There's one thing that can hurt an officer, and that's the hands. So we're trained over and over, just watch those hands at all times. If something's going to happen, it's going to be with somebody's hands. Mm-hmm. So you want to keep your, you know, eyes on those hands, and they don't like to see a furtive movements. So if you are rifling around your vehicle, making movements with those hands as the officers approach you, that raises the reasonable suspicion of that officer, which then may give them reason to search that vehicle in the front where you were reaching underneath that seat in the glove box, whatever is that area that they can articulate that they had concern that you were making funny movements as they approached you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's that. There's case law that officers are taught during, you know, training. They go over case law constantly, and evolving case law if things change. If there's rulings here in local court and all kinds of courts, they want to know about it.
I want to thank you so much for dropping by.
Sure.
And I know that you came, you dragged your family away from the White Sox game, and I appreciate hanging out with us.
Thank
so we'd love
John.
To have you back again.
Absolutely.
We've been talking to law enforcement expert John O'Malley, and look forward to having more conversations like this with you, sir.
Absolutely.
The more we know, the more we understand.
That's right.
More after this on 720 WGN.